From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, as the jury begins deliberations, we look back on the O.J. Simpson trial with satirist Harry Shearer. Ever since the Broncos' slow-speed chase, he's lampooned the circus surrounding the Simpson story. His satires are collected on the CD O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. Also, rock critic Ken Tucker sees some signs of hope that rock and roll might once again become a meeting ground for people of different backgrounds and ethnicities. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Democrats have unveiled an alternative plan to rein in Medicare spending, UPI's Shirley Smith reports.
Senator Tom Daschle of South Dakota says the Democratic plan proposes $89 billion in cuts instead of the $270 billion the Republican plan proposes.
What we propose is a mainstream solution, not an extreme solution.
Senator Daschle says the Democratic plan takes care of the immediate needs of Medicare until the early part of next century, while buying time for long-term solutions to be found. Shirley Smith, Capitol Hill.
Dozens of Jewish settlers broke through Israeli army barricades and waded across the Jordanian, or rather the Jordan River, to protest increasing Palestinian self-rule in the West Bank. Two Jordanian army officers arrived at the riverbank but did not interfere. Soaked demonstrators surrounded the officers and shook their hands. The settlers gave the Jordanians a letter asking Jordan's King Hussein to help prevent the enlargement of the PLO-ruled West Bank enclave of Jericho. The demonstrators, most of whom live in settlements in the Jordan Valley, claimed they'll be in danger if more land is put under Palestinian control. The French government is sending warships to the Comoro Islands 3 days after the government was overthrown by a French mercenary. Lynn Terry reports from Paris.
Reports from the Comoros said a French vessel could be seen off the coast, but had not entered the port. Military officials in Paris said there are several more warships trailing behind. France put its troops in the region on alert after the coup last week and warned that if the lives of any of its citizens in the Comoros came under threat, it would intervene. 1,500 French nationals live there. Prime Minister Alain Juppé said last week France would not send in troops, but later officials said President Jacques Chirac has not ruled anything out. The government is coming under strong pressure from some African countries to intervene. The French mercenary who staged the coup, Bob Denard, once virtually ruled the Comoros until he was ousted in 1989 by French troops. For National Public Radio, I'm Lynn Terry in Paris.
Jurors deliberating the double murder charges against O.J. Simpson have asked to have some trial testimony read back to them. Judge Lance Ito plans to fulfill the request in about an hour. Defense lawyers for Islamic cleric Sheikh Oman Abdel Rahman and 9 others plan to appeal their terrorism convictions. The 10 were found guilty yesterday of planning to blow up New York City landmarks in an attempt to change U.S. policy toward the Middle East. One of the sheikh's lawyers alleges pre-trial publicity generated an atmosphere of McCarthyism that prejudiced jurors against Muslims. FBI Director Louis Free says arrests of the sheikh and his co-suspects headed off what could have been a catastrophic terror attack. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 22 points at 4767. This is NPR. The makers of breast implants have unveiled a new money offer that would partially replace a collapsing $4.25 billion settlement of women's injury claims. Full details are not yet known, but reports indicate it would give women less money and might require them to provide new proof of injury. The offer is from Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, Baxter International Incorporated, and 3M. It does not include Dow Corning, the biggest defendant in the first settlement. Detroit Tigers manager George Sparky Anderson has resigned after 17 years with the baseball club. Gavin Sutton of member station WDET has this report.
Anderson is the Tigers' winningest manager ever with 1,331 wins and 1,248 losses. He's also the Major League's third winningest manager with more than 2,100 wins overall. But the likely future Hall of Famer says he made up his mind before the Tigers' last road trip that it was time for a change. Anderson says he may be back in a baseball uniform, though not if it takes longer than his self-imposed deadline.
If spring training starts and I'm not working, I will be done forever. I will not come back.
Anderson is the only manager to win World Series championships in both the National and American Leagues. For now, he'll trade in 17 years with the Tigers for some golf and a Caribbean cruise. For National Public Radio, this is Gavin Sutton in Detroit.
Mexican authorities say that at least 5 people are missing in widespread flooding caused by Hurricane Opal, which is striking the coast of Mexico. Up to 10 inches of rain fell over coastal areas, and flooding is reported in hundreds of eastern Mexican communities. The storm crossed over the Yucatan Peninsula and then changed from a tropical storm into a hurricane. Opal's expected to turn gradually north, possibly toward the U.S. Gulf Coast. The storm could also delay Thursday's launch of the space shuttle Columbia. I'm Korva Coleman in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The jury has begun deliberations in the O.J. Simpson trial. An extraordinary chapter in American legal history is about to come to a close. So is an extraordinary chapter in American media history. Satirist Harry Shearer is pretty obsessive about watching how American culture and politics are reflected in the mass media. Ever since the Broncos' slow-speed chase, he's been watching the spectacle surrounding the O.J. story. His satires have been broadcast on his syndicated public radio program, Le Show, and on All Things Considered. They're collected on his CD, O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. Shearer is also a former cast member of Saturday Night Live, a member of Spinal Tap, which is a spoof of a heavy metal band, and he's the voice of several characters on The Simpsons. We invited him to look back with us on the O.J. trial. I asked him why he's been so obsessive about the story right from the start.
I was working on a movie, which should be nameless, which is very close to its actual title, and it was close to audience lists, but I was in a motion picture studio on a certain Friday afternoon, and people kept, and we couldn't move, we couldn't listen to the radio, we couldn't watch TV, but people kept running onto the set every half hour, 45 minutes, with information on where O.J.'s Bronco was. And the place was mesmerized. And it just, and of course, I got home expecting to find an NBA game on tape for me to watch. And instead, I had 3.5 hours of tape of this Bronco going up the 405. And something went off in my head. I realized, A, something big was happening here, and B, it was ludicrous from the start. So all of the news stations in Los Angeles that afternoon were broadcasting phone calls from anyone who had ever known O.J. Simpson or gone to college with him or his coach in college, saying, O.J., get out of the car. Stop this. As if that's what he's doing in the Bronco, is listening to the news. I didn't think he was going to. Let's find out what the weather's going to be down the freeway, A.C. So I just thought that was a great ludicrous start to it. So that Sunday I did the phone calls that came in, but he got home too soon for them to broadcast. So, like, Joan Rivers was calling him and Paul Harvey and other people to tell him to get out of the Bronco, and then it started from there.
Well, actually, why don't we stop here and hear an excerpt of that sketch, which I guess was the first O.J. sketch that you did.
That's right.
And this is on Harry Shearer's CD, O.J. on Trial, The Early Years.
O.J., this is Joan Rivers. We met. I know we met at last year's Israel Bonds dinner at the Beverly Hilton. I was wearing the cream thing by Donna Karan. I could kill myself for even owning a shmata like that. But listen, O.J., we all know loss. I just lost my home shopping show, which I gave up my talk show to do. So how do you think I feel? And my God, the whole Edgar thing. So, yes, we all know loss. But it's what we do with it that counts. So, yes, I felt awful after Edgar died. I turned it into a TV movie, and I played the role of me. You see what I'm saying? Not that you should necessarily star in the movie of this, but on the other hand, you were a very good-looking African-American man. I know I'm rambling. That's why I called Collect. So seriously, honey, please do what's right. I want so very much to see it at next year's Israel Bond dinner. You will not believe what I'm wearing to it. Okay? Take care.
One moment, please, for the president of NBC Sports.
Juice, this is Dick Ebersole. Listen, I know we've had our little disputes recently over your role in NFL Live this fall. I hope to God this has nothing to do with what's going on now.
political satirist Harry Shearer, and that's one of the sketches on his CD, O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. Well, that seems like a really long time ago now.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
A lifetime ago. We've had a baseball strike and everything since then.
Harry, did you ever feel at any point that there was an incredibly tragic side to the O.J. trial, and that there were things that you just couldn't touch satirically?
Well, of course, the proximate cause of all of it was irredeemably brutal and tragic, and there's nothing funny about the murders. And I don't think anybody in their right minds would try to poke fun at that. And I pretty much leave the families alone, even though they've become part of the media circus. That is just to me too sad to be dealt with. But the preening lawyers, the media popinjays, the witnesses who paraded through our living rooms, to me that's all been fair game.
Well, you're at the epicenter of the trial now in L.A. What's the atmosphere there like now as everybody's waiting to see what the jury does?
Well, you know, Terry, it's interesting about L.A. I mean, we have gotten used to these locust-like swarms of media people from the East who come here every time there's a verdict about to be reached in a trial with any racial implications. And basically, we know what they're on. They're on the riot watch. And It amazes me because somewhere in East Coast newsrooms, the calculation has been made, Rodney King verdict equals riot. The fact is, there was an amazing amount of kindling in place before the Rodney King verdict, which is not nationally known. There was a young woman named Latasha Harlan, 18-year-old girl, who started to take an 89-cent bottle of orange juice out of a Korean-owned grocery store, started to shoplift it. Changed her mind, turned around, put the bottle back, turned to leave, and was shot in the back and killed by the Korean proprietress of the store. And this was on the store's security videotape. And the proprietress got probation. And a month later, a black man got 6 months in jail, I believe, for killing a dog. That percolated through the black community and created the conditions in which the first Rodney King verdict could set people off. That is not happening now. And I think everyone in the black community realizes, if anything, this guy's gotten the fairest trial in the history of man. He's gotten his money's worth. So you see these people here, and L.A. is like mesmerized, and it's been one of the great unifiers of the city, because you know you can get a good conversation going with anybody just by, hey, did you see that trial today?
Well, the trial has been happening in L.A., and if anybody knows how to commercially exploit any event, it's probably the people in Los Angeles, the home of the entertainment industry.
Thank you very much.
Anytime. So what's the most kind of crass commercial exploitation of the trial that you've seen?
You mean besides my CD?
Yeah, besides your CD, exactly. Yeah. The most promoted CD in the history of independent productions.
So it would ill behoove me to point to others as crass. Basically it's been the t-shirt vendors, Hollywood. I would say the most crass exploitation of it was the legal action filed a couple weeks ago by Mr. Orenthal J. Simpson to trademark the initials OJ, so that anything with OJ on it, you'd have to pay him money from now on. I would bow to no one in pointing to the Simpson side as the crass exploiters of the whole case.
We have a very funny sketch on your CD called OJ Line Tours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell us when you wrote this one.
This was pretty much the week after the Bronco chase, when I realized that, cavalcade had been imprinted on the minds of a lot of people, and would soon become the locations would soon become like the stations of the cross for the faithful.
Well, here we go. OJ Line Tours, written and performed by my guest Harry Shearer.
Every day, millions of people drive the Southern California freeways, but only a special few can be a part of freeway history. From suburban Orange County to near suburban West Los Angeles, it is a journey more famous than the Lewis and Clark Expedition and the Donner Party combined. As many people saw this rush hour trek across the heart of the L.A. Basin as saw man's first walk on the moon. And unlike that historic journey, this one you don't have to just dream about taking. Introducing OJ Line Tours, the only guaranteed 1.7 times actual speed tours of the nationally televised OJ Simpson Slow Speed Chase. You've seen it from helicopters and through the rear view mirrors of other vehicles. Imagine being able to see OJ Simpson's most famous ride from his point of view. This 2-hour fully escorted tour along the 91 and 405 freeways, as well as world famous Sunset Boulevard, will be the experience you'll want to never forget. You'll ride in air-conditioned comfort on a specially rented bus. Out of respect for the victims of the tragedy, you'll not be allowed to use flash photography. But if you order tickets before this offer expires, you'll be able to purchase limited edition posters, t-shirts, caps, coasters, towels, and toasters, with many of the landmarks along the route, such as the Mattel Toy Factory and the Herbalife Building, illustrated in full two colors. Bring your kids. It's a gift that's sure to last through at least two grades of school. OJ Lines guarantees you will ride exactly the same route as OJ did. And frequent Go Juice Go pep rallies with your fellow passengers will bring back all the excitement that special Friday afternoon. On your next trip to Southern California, tell your travel agent that you want to be a part of history. You want to ride OJ Line Tours. Seats are limited. Must be over 18. Length of trip approximate.
Harry, I can't believe nobody's actually done that.
I think somebody actually has done it, Terry.
Did they do it before or after your sketch?
After. I'm sad to report that once again, satire has predicted reality.
Well, maybe you can make some money and sue.
Yeah,
stealing your idea.
You know, you can't get into a civil court in California anymore thanks to the three strikes law, so that's not good advice.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, did you spend much... Let me just pause for a second and explain that we're reviewing the O.J. Simpson trial through the eyes of satirist Harry Shearer, who over the past year has had many really funny satirical sketches about the trial on his radio program, Le Show. And, Harry, did you ever go to the courtroom yourself?
Yes, I did. I went... last spring, friends of mine who work in network news got me one of their reporter's seats when he was out of town on a book tour. And I got to sit in during an afternoon of testimony by Andrea Mazzola, the trouble-plagued criminalist trainee who accompanied Dennis Fung to the crime scene. And to me, the most interesting thing, first of all, even though I work in television, it always comes as a surprise to me that life as depicted in the television screen looks larger than it does in reality. I mean, that is a tiny, tiny courtroom. It is a jewel box of a courtroom, if I may. It's really claustrophobic, virtually. And so you get that sense that you don't get on television. On television, it looks like a large, capacious courtroom, but it's really, everything is very close together. And secondly, the opportunity to look at the jurors, which is denied to you on television. And I took full advantage of that. At the time, which was admittedly only 4 months into the trial, they were remarkably attentive, especially considering the fact that L.A. courthouse air is almost as oxygen-deprived as the stuff they pump into Coach on Aerofloat.
My guest is Harry Shearer, and on his program, Le Show, his public radio program, for the past year he's been doing sketches about the O.J. Simpson trial. Many of those sketches are collected on his CD, O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. Harry, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more.
Great.
This is Fresh Air. Back with satirist Harry Shearer, and we're reviewing the O.J. Simpson trial. There were some very improbable stars that emerged from the O.J. Simpson trial, perhaps no more improbable than Cato Kaelin. And you have a really funny Cato Kaelin sketch on your CD, John Tesh and Cato's Peter and the Wolf. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you came up with this idea.
Just after listening to Cato's narrative style over the days of his testimony, it struck me that there was a great gift for storytelling being wasted.
And so how did you think, well, I'll team him up with John Tesh and have him do Peter and the Wolf?
Well, I had just seen John Tesh do his Live at Red Rocks special on PBS, you know, one more reason not to give money to public television. And I just thought, well, what's their next fundraising gimmick?
And I guess this is it. Let's hear it.
Coming next month to your public television station, the outdoor concert spectacle that electrified an entire countryside. It happened only once, but you can see it every night, all through a special Pledge Plus month. Master Maestro John Tesh teams with Master Storyteller Brian Cato Kalin to bring you and your children an unforgettable performance of Peter and the Wolf.
Once upon a time, there was, you know, this, a boy, Peter, he lived with his grandfather, you know, in a house. It wasn't in the, you know, there was a forest, in, you know, it was like near the forest, and early, you know, kind of before noon, before noon, Peter went to the gate and opened it, and went into the, you know, where the green is, the meadow.
Kofiev's perennially charming story and music get rocketed into the 90s by two of America's most unique and uniquely American talents. And it's not on cable. It's not in your video store. And it's certainly not on some interactive digital computer telephone link that's 5 years away. Kalin and Tesh in Peter and the Wolf are here now, only on public TV.
Okay, so the cat thought, that bird is so busy, you know, arguing, not, you know, angry, but arguing. He'll never notice me sneaking up, you know, and coming from behind, you know. He'll make a good, not lunch, you know, before, like, but not dinner. It's, you eat in the morning, breakfast.
Peter, his grandfather, the bird, the duck, the cat, and the wolf. They come alive in Cato Kalin's hypnotically vivid storytelling style. Is he the Garrison Keillor of the 90s? Certainly John Tesh thinks so. That's why he added his musical flair and gusto to this spectacular event. It's one way your public television station can say thank you in advance for the contribution you'll be reminded to give throughout this very special television evening.
Etc. is Harry Shearer from his CD, O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. Oh, what a great series of non sequiturs.
Thank you.
Do you do all the voices on that yourself?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh. And what about the music?
I did the music. I'm very proud to say I think I channeled John Tesh that day.
You got it. You really got it down. I think that John Tesh is the Liberace for our time.
He is.
Do you know? Because there's like fireworks and all kinds of showy things and incredibly flashy middle of the road.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah.
Well, let's move along and hear another one of your sketches from your CD. Now, of course, a big question has had to do with made-for-TV movies. There's already been how many? One?
I think there was one on Fox, and I think a couple of others have been announced. But and of course, you know, Murder One on ABC is basically a fictionalized version of the O.J. Simpson trial.
Have you been privy to any story meetings about made-for-TV movies?
No. I've just been around the industry long enough that I know what they're like without having to be there.
Well, we're going to pick up your sketch a little in progress on a made-for-TV movie on O.J. Why don't you set it up for us?
Okay, this is Fox did a sped to be the first to have a made-for-TV movie about the O.J. Simpson situation, and this piece is the behind-the-scenes featurette on the making of the O.J. Simpson TV movie.
Back at the offices of producers Poundstone and Trafe, the search for a catchy title for the movie is in full swing.
What about Running Back? He is a running back, and he's running back.
When is he running back? Well, you mean the chase?
Yeah.
Well, we want to sell that we're starting long before this got on the news, don't we?
Yeah, I'm just going through the football-related terms on the computer sheet here. Yeah. Nickel, defense, hash marks. These are worthless.
Did we definitely exclude rushing blood?
It confuses me.
Well, it's like he was a rusher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And blood rushing to your head in a crisis and blood.
I still like, can't you hear the cheering? It, you know, it's classier not to mention the blood. Either that or go, Juice, go.
Okay, ready and action!
Those are always exciting words. Right now, they were just being spoken to me by the director of this special edition. But pretty soon, those magic words will be heard on the set of the O.J. Simpson TV movie, whatever it's called. And days later, the results will be seen right here on your television set. I hope I've given you some sense of the eagerness we all have about this project. If all the people behind the scenes weren't working so darn hard, the end result wouldn't be so darn good. I'm Corey Feldman. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
The making of the O.J. Simpson TV movie was a Paradigms production.
Harry Shearer's satires are broadcast on his syndicated public radio program, Le Show, and on All Things Considered. His O.J. satires are collected on his CD, O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. Since the CD isn't available in stores, I'll give you the 800 number. It's 1-800-YES-OJ-CD. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we continue our look back on the O.J. Simpson trial with satirist Harry Shearer. We'll hear more of his sketches collected on his CD, O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. And rock critic Ken Tucker considers whether rock and roll has any power left to unite people of different backgrounds and ethnicities. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with satirist Harry Shearer. We're looking back on the O.J. Simpson trial and the media spectacle surrounding it. Shearer's O.J. satires have been broadcast on his syndicated public radio program, Le Show, and on All Things Considered. He's a former cast member of Saturday Night Live, a member of Spinal Tap, the band that spoofs heavy metal bands, and he does several voices on The Simpsons. When we left off, we heard his satire of the making of the O.J. Simpson TV movie. So, Harry Shearer, if you were casting the made-for-TV movie, who would you cast?
Well, I'd cast me as Robert Shapiro.
You could play all the parts.
Yeah. Johnny Cochran's a tough one. I guess you'd have to go Denzel Washington, you know, conventional wisdom version. Marsha Clark. Boy, that would be... Oh, Michelle Pfeiffer. Who are we kidding? No, for TV, Michelle Lee.
Okay.
And then, you know, you do the rest. Judge Ito. Is Johnny Yoon still in the business?
Well, who's he?
Oh, he was a Korean-American comic in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
I just love Johnny Carson always saying, and we've got Johnny Yoon. Johnny Yoon will be with us tonight. But I don't, I'm sure there's... Well, Pat Morita could play Judge Ito, I guess.
Who would you get to play O.J.?
O.J. he is an actor.
No,
he is available.
What movies have you seen him in?
Naked, Airplane. He was in one of the Airplane movies, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Naked Gun. He's a credible O.J. I'll tell you, though, the best actor in the whole bunch was Cato Kaelin. If you, the hardest work anybody in Los Angeles has to do now is to avoid running into Cato Kaelin, because he's as ubiquitous as the smog, and he's a totally different person than we saw on the stand. And you realize, as I think one realized with Ronald Reagan and certain other people in the public eye, that they've been able to manipulate our sense of them for their own well-being. In this case, this guy had an unenviable job of lying for his friend on the stand, and he found a persona behind which to do it.
And what were your impressions of the defense and the prosecution? Let's start with the prosecution.
The Los Angeles District Attorney's Office has a virtually two-decade-long record of losing big trials. And I'm not the only one who knows it. And the district attorney is up for re-election next year. These were people who were under an enormous burden. And from everything that one hears... basically, the case was being micromanaged by their boss for the protection of his own hide. They made an incredible blunder I'm not certain of the legalities involved, but I believe when they decided to convene a grand jury on the case, which was later disbanded, that they were locked into holding the trial that eventuated downtown and getting the jury pool that they got. And I think they've had second thoughts about that decision ever since. So I think that we have seen in a lot of cases why the L.A. District Attorney's Office has lost big cases over the years. They've made strange strategic decisions like, Mr. Simpson, would you mind trying on these gloves in situations where you would think they'd have been a little more cautious. As for the defense, it was the exact opposite. This was balls out, you know, throw everything at the wall. Something's got to stick. And you have to say the guy did get his money's worth. He got his $8 million worth. And if I were the blind sheik right now, I'd be calling Johnny Cochran.
What do you think of Johnny Cochran's style?
Well, it's there were two or three styles that he employed. And I think, you know, shifted back and forth from snake oil salesman to preacher. I mean, at some point in his closing argument, the Jesse Jackson pill he took that morning kicked in, and that was a whole other style than his over-ingratiating manner that he most often showed the jury. To me, it was oily. I think I heard that a lot of jurors, a couple of people who were on the jury and got dismissed, one female excused juror, really admired him a lot and just watched him and was mesmerized by him, apparently. But, the defense offered you a style for every taste. I mean, there was Gerald Ullman, who was the professor that put everybody in college asleep, you know, during their sophomore days. There was Barry Scheck, reminding everyone why America hates New Yorkers. it was really something for everyone.
Well, you have a couple of sketches about Johnny Cochran in which you call him Mr. Johnny.
Well, that was a name that Rosa Lopez came up with when she was testifying. Of course, testimony that the jury never heard. She referred to him several times as Mr. Johnny. That was the way she called him. And among a lot of us trial watchers, the name stuck.
I want to play a sketch that you did on Johnny Cochran yesterday on your radio program, Le Show. Do you want to say anything about writing this?
Yes. Well, Christopher Darden, the African-American prosecutor, has said that this would be his last trial. And I just thought that similarly, Johnny Cochran really doesn't have very many more or higher judicial peaks to climb. So he's got to take that act to another domain.
Life after O.J. The defense.
Hi, this is Johnny C. You know, people say to me all the time, or they used to say to me before I was surrounded by the fruit of Islam, Mr. Johnny, Joseph's coat had many colors, but not nearly as many as your ties. Where can I get ties like that? And suits and shirts to almost match. Well, now there's an answer. Now there's someplace for people with the courage to look their best at rock bottom prices. Mr. Johnny's Journey to Fashion. You know, department stores, even men's clothing outlets, make 50 to 100% profit on every suit they sell. But I say it's time to stop the markup! Stop the markup! Now that's possible because we're only open 2 days of the week, Saturday and Sunday, so we can pass 5 days' worth of saving on to you. We don't have to offer you the finest designer names and menswear, but we do. We don't have to offer you free alterations while you wait, and we wish we could, but we will. And that's why we say, if it doesn't fit, don't pay for it. If it doesn't fit, don't pay for it. Sure, the others could whine and moan and tell you some fantasy about low prices, but when you want the best for less and a rest from the mess, take the Journey to Fashion and let us do the rest. Good franchising opportunities still available for Journey to Fashion, too. So don't let them turn you around and make you pay for the privilege. Keep your eyes on the price. It's time to send those other stores a message. It's time to stand up in style and be a man with a fashion plan. Mr. Johnny's Journey to Fashion. Remember, if it doesn't fit, you must not pay for it.
Life after OJ continues.
Satirist Harry Shearer walking the line of taste there.
Taste? How did that get into the conversation?
So were you surprised when Johnny Cochran started rhyming at the end?
Yeah, as I say, that's when the Jesse Jackson pill apparently kicked in. But, you know, I'm a great admirer of if I was going to go to any church, it would be the Black Pentecostal church, because you know, to me, they get a real religious experience for their money. So I'm kind of used to that style. It's something that Marsha Clark could not aspire to, and he knew it.
Satirist Harry Shearer is my guest. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. You have a plan for what happens to the DA after the O.J. trial.
Well, it's not a plan. It's what I think is actually going on today as we speak. Yeah. You know, as I say, he has an election coming up, and I imagine that he's sitting there wargaming with Brian Kelberg, because Kelberg seems to be the smartest guy in the office.
Do you want to say anything else to introduce this sketch
that you did
last night? You just did.
I think I just did.
Here we go.
Life after O.J. The office of L.A. District Attorney Gil Garcetti.
Okay, Kelberg, take me through it again. And this time, you know, try to keep it down to a couple of thousand well-chosen words.
I will do my best, although in all honesty, the forensic side of this operation is far more my strong suit than the political side.
Look, I told you on the phone, mm-hmm. my political advisor quit to go to work for Pete Wilson mm-hmm. just before his little, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, a masterstroke of bad time. Mm-hmm. Something I'm not unfamiliar with from my casework, if I'm not making too fine a...
Just get on with it!
Yes, sir. Mm. Okay, if Simpson is convicted... They take an appeal. Mm-hmm. Appeal is pending during your re-election cycle, unless they take a writ of mandamus to the Supreme Court.
Who's going to give it to them? Clarence Thomas? What? Don't make me laugh. I'm smiling too hard to laugh.
Well, 14th Amendment, deprivation of due process due to civil rights deprivation by Furman. Breyer might grant it.
That's good for me. Mm-hmm.
If they grant it, you campaign against federal usurpation of local justice. Mm-hmm. If they don't, it's a wash.
Okay. Hung jury?
Hmm. Hung jury is the nut cruncher, if I may use that kind of gonadal metaphor in this context. Mm-hmm. Anybody who runs against you is going to say you spent $8 million for nothing.
No, we say through our efforts, the scourge of racism in the LAPD was exposed to the light.
By our efforts at putting Furman on the stand? I don't think so.
We prosecute again. Mm-hmm. The $8 million wasn't spent. It was invested. Trial 2 is the payoff. Well, we don't say payoff. Mm. We don't use words like that. They have, you know, meanings, but...
If the county supervisors say there's no money for a second trial, I guess you run against the Supes.
Mm-hmm.
Five little men who...
Four little men and one overweight woman.
Whatever. Who stand athwart our... I'm not good with the colorful metaphors, but stand in the way of justice.
Mm-hmm. Not baby justice.
I was watching on the little TV in my office. Mm. I thought he was saying lady justice.
No.
And I was listening with half an ear. Yeah. Dr. Like Schmann kept calling me with stuff for Marcia to say. Anyway, I digress. Mm. And I digress further by observing my digression.
Will you come on?
Okay. He's acquitted and you're...
I know, and my ass isn't worth doodly squat north of Pico.
I was going to say you're the inheritor of the great tradition of losing the big ones in the L.A. District Attorney's Office.
Mm.
An acquittal? I don't know. I frankly don't see any way that an acquittal is a good thing for your campaign. I may be missing something.
You are. Mm. We do what only the gutsiest, toughest on crime, most honest and intimidated District Attorney's Office will do.
Mm.
We prosecute Al Cowlings for driving the Bronco. I don't think we're about to lose a case where we've got 100 million witnesses. Do you?
Sir, I'm an optimist. I don't think so.
Life after OJ continues.
Setterist Harry Shearer, and that was from yesterday's edition of his program, Le Show. And many of his O.J. sketches are collected on his CD, O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. So if you were on the jury, which way would you vote? Put you on
if
the spot
I were
here.
On the if I were on the jury, or yeah. What do I think the jury would do?
No, no, no. What would you do?
I think after watching the trial very closely and being aware of exactly, I mean, the fact is both sides are right. And as a juror, you have to deal with that fact. I do think that O.J. Simpson is guilty of the crimes of which he's charged, and the L.A. Police Department is corrupt and racist, and the jury is allowed to reach a verdict on only one of those things, unless, you know, you follow Johnny Cochran and take the extraordinary step of nullifying the evidence. So I think I would vote guilty and then say, put me on the grand jury so I can investigate the cops, too.
What made the O.J. Simpson trial such a kind of perfect opportunity for a satirist such as yourself?
Well, certainly the decision to put it on television was a major contributing factor, because there's no other way, I think, that the listening public would have been as familiar with the wealth of detail mm-hmm. That the trial generated. And to me, that's where the comedy was, in just the unbelievable twists and turns of the story, but in just the marvelous detail, the judge who couldn't make up his mind whether he loved the media or hated the media, the lawyers who, you know, behaved in a lot of ways like unruly children. I think had we been dependent on print or reporters, you know, telling us in the third person, I don't think it would have been nearly the vehicle for satire that it became.
That said, do you think it was a good thing for America and for the court system and the trial to have the trial televised?
Yes, I do. I think, you know, you hear lawyers and judges especially being quoted as saying it's a bad thing. But, you know, I think that's incredibly self-protective of them. You know, they do say don't watch sausage being made if you want to eat it. And we've just watched 9 months of sausage being made. But we put Congress on TV. We put the president on TV. I think this is the way that the American public has of knowing what's going on in all three branches of the government we pay for. And I think it's entirely appropriate.
What's life after O.J. going to be like for you, Harry Shearer?
Lonely. You know, not only was it a great shared experience, not since the time that the Beatles hit America have I felt so much kinship with a mass audience.
That's right.
And now we're going to go our separate ways. So I think it'll be, and you know, you won't be able to strike up a conversation in an elevator or in line at the supermarket with such surety anymore. You know, somebody may be a Laker fan, they may not be, but you knew that everybody that within, you know, talking radius was had something to say, and in LA especially, you knew that everybody that you ran into had some purchase on some otherwise unknown fact about the O.J. case. Everyone was connected to it in some way. Everyone's dental hygienist knew somebody whose daughter was in the same play group with a lawyer or something. You know, I mean, everyone had a story to tell about this case. And I guess real life pales by comparison.
One last question. How do you think the jury's going to vote?
I think this is a jury that's been here for the better part of a year. They do not want to walk away not having accomplished anything. I think Judge Ito gave them an easy out when he said you could find second-degree murder as a possible charge. I think the jury will find at least one count of second-degree murder O.J. Simpson guilty. I do not think they will be hung.
Well, we're going to end with a rap that you did last night on your show.
Great.
Kato Ito and the Elmo. Want to say a word about it?
This is I've done summations of various periods of the trial. This is the period that covers the rebuttal testimony and the closing arguments. And I have to say, for all those who like Terry, didn't know what the Elmo is. It is the large screen projection device that puts the evidence on a large screen in the courtroom for the jury to see. And serious trial watchers are familiar with Judge Ito saying, "Mr. Harris, can we have that on the Elmo, please?"
And Harry, thank you for trying so hard to make me look good.
My pleasure, Terry.
I appreciate it.
I live to make you look good.
I know. Well, thanks a lot for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
O.J., we could see by the dawn's early light, by the twilight's last gleaming, and all through the night, the fiatos, they were even cut off the radio, but everyone was watching Kato, you know, part of the Elmo. And the Elmo. Arguing the arguments, the lawyers start to bickering. Ito says, "I hope you saw the jurors, they were snickering, there's circles under Clark's eyes, she moves in slow motion, is it a mountain of evidence? Or is it an ocean?" Now Darden says, "Folks, let's cut to the chase," reminding us of everything left out of the case. Where was Rosa? How come Dr. Walker didn't have her say, both on the night and in the trial? Where was O.J.? The 911 tape, folks, the fuse is getting shorter. Now save baby justice. That confuses even the court reporter. Cochran's testifying, took a Jesse Jackson pill. Check takes the evidence and runs it through the mill. Is it nostalgia we're feeling as the names come rushing at us? Michelle Kessler, Dr. Reeder, Thanaparatus. A black hole, a cesspool. Yamauchi spilled the blood. They never explained the four allele on the Bronco steering wheel. Johnny reaches climax. Will the cover-up continue? Make her answer 15 questions. Do you have the courage? Virginia, you can't trust the messenger, twin devils of deception. Furman's another Hitler, Goldman gags at the connection. So he went to McDonald's in a Bentley, that's no crime. Was he sweating? I've been sweating. It's a journey, it's a rhyme. Paula didn't reject him, he and Ship were never alone. Ship didn't happen, send a message, then go home. Hasn't Furman planned since 85 to get him in his trap? Aren't I still Johnny Cochran, even when I wear a knit cap? O.J., we have seen by the dawn's early light, by the twilight's last gleaming, and rerun at night. Bomb threats and t-shirts, nine floors below, but everyone's been watching Kato, Ito,
but sit down.
And the Elmo. And the Elmo.
Harry Shearer is the host of the syndicated public radio program Le Show. His satires are also heard on All Things Considered. His new CD is called O.J. on Trial, The Early Years. Shearer also does several voices on The Simpsons, including Homer's boss, Mr. Burns, his assistant, Smithers, and Principal Skinner. Shearer has a pretty interesting homepage on the internet. He never seems to get the address straight on his own show, so let's see if I can do any better. It's http://www.pobox.com/Harry. Yeah, I think I showed him up pretty good. This is Fresh Air. Rock critic Ken Tucker usually reviews a new album or talks about a pop music trend on Fresh Air, but today he wanted to get a little autobiographical to make a point.
Yeah, I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and a 6-4 Impala.
For many years, I've proceeded as a critic from the notion that one of the paramount virtues of rock and roll is that it unites the races, that rock music's fundamental union of black and white art forms is a metaphor for its healing powers as social culture. Over the years, of course, this theory has endured many nasty onslaughts. In my time as a writer, for example, I've seen disco become a code word for black music used by whites who had deep, ugly contempt for its practitioners that went beyond matters of aesthetics. I've also listened to a lot of gangsta rap that was virulently, generally anti-white whenever it wasn't specifically anti-Semitic. In the past year or so, though, I've seen signs of hope that rock and roll might once again become a meeting ground for people of widely different backgrounds and ethnicities. Certainly, the acceptance of rap and funk music by millions of white suburban kids, no matter that some of that support is rooted in romantic reverse role-playing, is encouraging. So is the success of a multiracial act like Hootie and the Blowfish, no matter how bland hipsters like you and I may think their music is. Where am I going here? Well, toward a couple of small but specific examples that hit me on a personal level recently. On a hot September day, I drove my 10-year-old daughter to a soccer tournament in East Brunswick, New Jersey. As it happens, my daughter's team is all white. As it also happens, one of her teammates brought along a tape player. And as a way of cheerleading this all-girl, cheerleaderless team to victory, this was the song she chose to play at top volume minutes before the game.
This is how we do it. It's Friday night, and I feel alright. The party's here on the west side, so I reach for my 40 and I turn it up. Designated driver, take the keys to my truck. Hit the shawl cause I'm faded. Honey's in the streets, say money, oh we made it. It feels so good in my hood tonight. The summertime skirts and the guys ain't canine. All the gangbangers forgot about the drive-by. You gotta get your groove on before you go get paid. So tip up your cup and throw your hands up and let me hear the party say, I'm kinda buzzed and it's all because
this is how we do it.
South Central does it like nobody does. The old school back.
This is how we do it.
This is how we do it.
Now, it's a reasonable guess that Montel Jordan did not foresee that his huge hit single, This Is How We Do It, which sounds to me like the song of a fellow who's going to get very lucky in the romance department, would become an inspirational song for a bunch of sweaty little soccer players. But that's the thing about pop music. People use it for their own purposes. In this case, the propulsive, new jack swingy beat and the positive can-do attitude of the lyrics struck these 10-year-olds as just the sort of thing to get them psyched for the game. Now, honesty compels me to admit that our team lost the tournament, but it also led to another pop musical moment. Having been trounced, a couple of the girls started singing the rap lyrics to Ski-Lo's I Wish.
I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and a 6-4 father. I wish I was like 6'9" so I could get with Leoshi, cause she don't know me, but yo, she's really fine. You know, I see her all the time, everywhere I go, and even in my dreams, I can scheme a way to make her mine. Cause I know she's living fat, her boyfriend's tall, and he plays ball, so how am I gonna compete with that? Cause when it comes to playing basketball, I'm always last to be picked, and in some cases, never picked at all. So I just lean up on the wall, or sit up in the bleachers with the rest of the girls who came to watch their man ball. Dag y'all, I never understood black, while the jocks get the fly girls, and me, I get the hood rats. I tell them scat, skittles, kabobble. Got hit with a bottle, but sit in a hospital for talking that mess. I confess it's a shame when you living in a city that's the size of a box and nobody knows your name. Glad I came to my senses, like quick, got sick to my stomach. Overcome it by thoughts of me and her together, right? So when I asked her out, she said I wasn't that tight. I wish
is one of the most charming pieces of rap music around, and it's easy to see why kids can get behind it, since Ski-Lo is wishing for things that lots of children want. To be taller, to be more self-confident, to have control in a crazy world. Just a few years ago, pop radio stations were divided so firmly along racial lines that a song like I Wish wouldn't have hit too many white suburban ears. These days, it's nothing less than an anthem. Is my notion of pop music as an instigator of integration a hopelessly outmoded, even deluded one? I don't know, maybe. But I'd like to think it's not.
Ken Tucker is critic at large for Entertainment Weekly. Fresh Air's senior producer is Danny Miller. Our engineers this week are Richard Parker, Joyce Lieberman, Audrey Bentham, and Al Banks. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross. As I mentioned earlier, Harry Shearer does several voices on The Simpsons. So let's go out with music from The Simpsons record, The Simpsons Sing the Blues.
Turn on the surveillance monitors.
Yes, sir.
It's worse than I thought. Each morning at 9, they trickle through the gate. They go home early. They come in late. Reeking of cheap liquor, they stumble through the day. Never give a thought to honest work for honest pay. I know it shouldn't vex me. I shouldn't take it hard. I should ignore their capering with a kingly disregard. But
look at all those idiots.
Oh, look at all those boobs.
An office full of morons.
A factory full of fools.
Is it any wonder
that I'm singing the blues?
Yours is a heavy burden, sir.
I'm just getting started. They make personal phone calls on company time. They Xerox their buttocks and guess who pays the dime?
Support for Fresh Air is provided by the George Gund Foundation and the National Endowment for the Arts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.